Start your day.
The Big Show.
3BA.
FM 102.3.
Being a Tuesday morning, let's shoot the breeze from thebigsmoke.com.au. Hello, Alex Centre.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very, very well. It's a wonder you didn't get blown away there on Sydney Harbour. I saw the video you popped up of the very rough waters around your home, and it didn't look good, and it's not looking good at the moment for you guys in Sydney and right along the coastline. Very bad conditions.
Yeah, there are a lot of places where they're doing it really tough right now.
Absolutely. So take care of yourself and those around you, all right? Let's talk happy and sad music. It's found to be received differently depending on what country you live in. What's going on here, Alex?
Yeah, so this was new research that was actually led by Sydney University. And what they did is they looked into the perceptions of major and minor chords depending on where you lived. So Western culture would think of music as happy or sad, and then put music in those categories. But what the research found was that when people in other countries, for example, communities in Papua New Guinea, were listening to that same music, they were asked which music made them happier, and they often used the music Westernized countries would say made them sad. And it had a lot to do with the way that they just perceived how beautiful the melodies were.
So it was vice versa. What we thought was sad, they thought was happy.
Yeah, so it's associative conditioning. So, for example, we are trained to believe that a really happy, clappy song is a song that should make us cheer us up. And the communities in Papua New Guinea didn't have those cultural and societal conditioning. So they just saw the music for what it was.
Yeah,
so
I guess
that familiarity.
When you're living in, I guess, a remote place like Papua New Guinea as opposed to, fairly heavy and populated place like we are, or you are in Sydney or Melbourne or even here in Ballarat, I can see the difference.
Yeah.
Let's move. Speaking of other countries, there's a place called Chile. And, for those who want to call it chili, sure, go for it. Wants to try to encourage better nutrition and feed children using 3D printed food.
This is fascinating because it's basically taking on the traditional use of algae, for example, and using that with a 3D printer to play around with different types of textures of food. So looking for different visuals and colours and tastes and flavours for the primary focus of creating nutritional content for children. So they wanted to create 3D printed food that was nutritious but also tasty and that it would particularly appeal to children. Now, they did this using designed sweets and pasta and other foods through the 3D printed machine, and they also took on the same methodology that NASA tested in 2013, which was around expanding the variety of foods that astronauts could eat while they were in space.
Yes, very soon you too could be eating 3D printed food. I'm glad you said that they were using pasta through the printer because plastic just doesn't seem to turn me on where food is concerned.
No, well, they're using things like, for example, instant mashed powder.
Oh, come on.
And rice flour, and then they're combining those things with the algae, which generates stabilisation, which is why it worked with a 3D printed machine.
Hey, do you know what's available at every McDonald's outlet throughout Australia at the moment?
What, 3D printed burgers?
No. Close enough, the McPlant burger.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. It's a plant-based patty made from peas, rice, potatoes and beetroot. And also on the burger you get tomato, lettuce, pickles and onions and a mayonnaise-style sort of saucy, captured.
That's vegan?
Yeah, well, no, it's not actually strictly vegan because the patty is cooked on the same grill that they cook their normal patties on and their eggs.
Got it.
So it's not strictly vegan, but they are calling it the McPlant Burger. Watch out for that. Oh, that'll be massive, Alex.
Yeah, sounds delightful.
Not. Let's wrap up this morning, shoot the breeze, with a topic that I find hard to believe, but it's true. People are welding jewellery to themselves as a form of tattoo, if you like. What's going on here, Alex?
So we saw a movement of people who were using piercings as a way of expressing their individuality.
Sure.
And they would do that in different ways. And then we see people with tattoos. But now there is actually a movement where people want to create permanent jewellery. And they bond that jewellery to their bodies permanently through welding. And there's been a number of people who can do this for you. I wouldn't recommend it, but we've looked into people who have done it. And some people have said that, you know, they use pliers and then they use a welding tool to close the end of the chains together around the wrist. And basically it's something that you can't remove. And you get a permanent bracelet. My question is, you know, your tastes in jewellery change over your life. Man, and I just can't imagine wanting the seashell bracelet I wore when I was 13 as an adult woman.
I can't see any mother or father in their right mind allowing their 13-year-old to have a permanent seashell bracelet welded to their wrist, Alexandra.
Yeah, and some people are using this as a way to bond with their family. So, for example, one woman did it with her mom, so they both had permanently welded bracelets put onto their wrists. And it was a way for them to bond and have this experience together.
Yes, and they now have regular psychiatrist checkups as well, I would have thought. Please don't do that at home. Welding jewellery to your body, it should be a no-go. There should be a law made against it, as a matter of fact. That is just sounds so dangerous to me. It's not funny. Alex Center from thebigsmoke.com.au. Always a pleasure to catch up. We'll chat next week.
Thank you.